Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
MISD. Candidates Have West Texas Ties. By Stuart Doreen. Brian Murray said this week that the five candidates being interviewed after the Thanksgiving Day weekend will be familiar with the region, just like many from Midland want. A West Texas candidate came to the forefront after the departure of former Superintendent Angelica Ramsey to Fort Worth ISD. Ramsey was with the district for around 18 months, and her recruitment to the larger district inside the much larger metropolitan area left many inside the community wanting a superintendent who will want to stay in Midland. Murray said there will be five interviews beginning on Monday. I think the common thread to all of them is that they all have a tie to West Texas. Some very strong ties, Murray said. We heard that over and over again, that we want someone who knows West Texas and that is not going to come out here and not be accustomed to who we are and what we are. So I think the candidate pool right now all have a tie and expressed a desire to be here. Murray added that the five candidates were selected by the new board during a meeting last week. He said board members went through resumes and applications independently, where each board member reviewed every file and scored the applicant. From there, the scoring of the candidates showed a clear separation between the top five, those candidates the board members will interview, and the rest of the candidates. The number of candidates will be whittled down when the second round of interviews takes place in December. Midland ISD leaders have stated they would like the next superintendent in place in January. That allows the person to be involved in budgeting and scheduling of the 2023-2024 school year. Reports. Conaway lobbied for FTX. By Stuart Doreen. Among the lobbyists representing the crypto exchange FTX was former Congressman Mike Conaway. The Midland Republican and former chairman of the House Committee on Agriculture helped start the Conaway Graves Group after his 16 years as a member of Congress. Conaway is listed as a founding principal with the firm. The website Politico reported in June that the Conaway Graves Group signed FTX as the cryptocurrency exchange continued to add lobbyists with ties to its preferred federal regulator, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, CFTC, or the Ag Committee, which oversees it. At the time, Politico referred to a lobbying disclosure from the Conaway Graves Group that stated that the firm would lobby for FTX on congressional and executive branch issues related to the formation of orderly digital asset markets. The same report stated Conaway registered to lobby for the first time this year. The website Grid News reported earlier this year that outside lobbyists, including former Republican Congressman Mike Conaway of Texas, who in the past chaired the House committee that oversees the CFTC, were retained to help make FTX's case to lawmakers. In a Grid News report from earlier this week, the website stated, FTX's strategy involved wooing Republican and Democratic lawmakers alike with millions of dollars in campaign cash. FTX and its executives spent more than $60 million overall on the midterm elections, in addition to hiring a spate of former regulators and Capitol Hill aides to lobby Congress and exploiting partisan and ideological splits to achieve FTX's policy goal of having a light-touch regulation from Washington. FTX collapsed this month, and the impact continues to make financial headlines. The Associated Press reported earlier this month other crypto firms are failing as a result of FTX's unraveling, events reminiscent of the domino-like meltdowns of the 2008 financial crisis. The AP also reported the once third-largest cryptocurrency exchange, FTX, owes more than $3 billion to its largest creditors. The Bahamas-based company and its founder, Sam Bankman-Fried, are under investigation by state and federal authorities for allegedly investing depositors' funds in ventures without their approval, according to the AP. Last week, Politico reported that Conaway Graves Group severed ties with FTX earlier this month. Death notices. Efrain Benavides Galindo. Efrain Benavides Galindo, 77, of Midland, passed away on Monday, November 21, 2022. Viewing will be at Llewellyn Garcia Funeral Home on Sunday, November 27, 2022, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., and Monday, November 28, 2022, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., Rosary at 7 p.m. Funeral service will be Tuesday, November 29, 2022, at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinnfh.com. Enadelia J. Bejarano. Enadelia J. Bejarano, 81, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, November 19, 2022. A graveside service will be Wednesday, November 23rd, at 10 a.m., at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinnfh.com. Enid Davis, July 30, 1927 to November 15, 2022. Midland. A memorial service will be held for Enid on December 3, 2022 at 3 p.m. at First Christian Church, 1301 West Louisiana Avenue, Midland, Texas.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekender Edition, published Saturday, November 26, 2022. Front page. Facilities team calls for new high schools. MISD Long Range Planning Committee puts campus improvements number one on list, by Stuart Doreen. Campus improvements and the building of two new high schools are currently the top two recommendations of a Midland ISD Long Range Planning Committee. Committee members made a presentation to the school board this week showing 13 recommendations. Those started with improvements to mechanical, electrical, and plumbing at Midland ISD schools and the building of two new high schools that would serve students in grades 9 through 12 at Midland High School and Legacy High School. The rest of the recommendations from the committee, which will finalize the plan and turn it into the board at a future meeting, include, in order, the building of a new elementary school in Northeast Midland, repurposing the current Midland Freshman High School as a middle school, repurposing Legacy High School as a middle school, general campus improvements specifically for accessibility and code, the demolition of Legacy Freshman High School and the designation of the land as a future school site, the rezoning of the current General Franks Elementary School when the new elementary school in Northeast Midland opens, determining a future use of Midland High, general campus improvements, specifically building interiors, general campus improvements, specifically site improvements, general campus improvements, specifically building exteriors, purchase land for future elementary school in the district's southern regions. There are still other steps to take care of before a final long-range plan is turned into the Midland ISD Board. Once the facilities plan is turned in, the board could recommend the formation of a bond planning committee. Midland ISD last presented a bond to the residents of Midland in 2019. The $569 million bond referendum narrowly failed. The building of two new high schools is likely to dwarf the 2019 bond total. The long-range facility committee's work addressed the needs of current facilities, which the district assessed at $294.4 million. The assessment cost summary in the report included $14.9 million for accessibility code, $50.8 million for site, $16.6 million for exterior, $116.7 million for interior, $55.4 million for MEP, mechanical electrical plumbing, and $11.4 million for roof work. Grade reconfiguration was a second priority, something that shouldn't come as a surprise. Grade reconfiguration has been a goal for many years. Recommended grade reconfiguration, according to the facilities committee, includes two comprehensive high schools for grades 9 through 12, 3,500 to 4,000 students each, six middle schools for grades 6 through 8, 1,000 to 1,200 students each, all current and future elementary campuses for pre-K through 5th grade, future elementary schools to be built for 750 to 900 students. That all sounds like a great plan, Board President Brian Murray said. And so, you know, there'll be work going along with that because obviously it's a very difficult time for a bond or even to have that discussion because interest rates and just inflation has killed us when it comes to materials and building. We have to be smart about how we go about that. Murray added district leadership will do what is best for not only academics, but safety. Board member Robert Marquez was critical of the recommendation as he wants to see a new Southside Elementary School higher on the list. He believes that growth on the Southside is deserving of a new school, just like the growth that has taken place on the north side of Midland. Board member Brandon Hodges wanted to see the district be more uniform with its student population numbers, citing different estimates on different MISD documents shown to the board. Hodges said that he believes more specificity on numbers, including projected numbers, will help the board to determine a facility's strategy and then help convince the public that strategy is good. There was also discussion about what to do with the current Midland High campus should a new Midland High School be built. Potential options, according to the facilities committee, include a special campus, a school of choice, a career technical education high school, a fine arts academy for middle schoolers, a professional development center, an early childhood campus, a family service center, or selling the property. If the entire campus is repurposed, the district should account for a minimum of $30 million for general campus improvements as identified by facilities assessment and operations team, the current report states. The facilities study also currently states, as of 2020, 33% of Midland ISD campuses were over capacity, and by 2030, 58% of campuses will be over capacity. October home sales in Midland dropped 32%. According to Texas A&M Real Estate Center, it is the fewest since February 2021. By Stuart Doreen. The number of home sales dropped 32% in Midland County in October, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. While the number of homes sold have declined from September to October in recent years, The decline this year was double the drop in 2021 and higher than other West Texas markets, including Tom Green, 20.7%, Ector, 20%, Lubbock, 13%, and Randall County, 4%. Taylor County, where Abilene resides, also experienced a drop above 30%, 31.8%. The 165 homes sold, according to the Texas A&M Center, was not only 26.3% lower than October 2021, but also the lowest number for any month in Midland County going back to February 2021. The Real Estate Center also showed a total dollar volume of $55.278 million, which was a $37 million decline compared to September and the lowest month going back to January 2021. Not only did sales struggle to keep up with previous months, but the average price also fell 12%, or more than $50,000, from $385,193 in September to $335,024 in October. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center did report the median price for a home sold in Midland County actually increased from $315,000 to $317,655. October was the 50th straight month that the average price for a home sold in Midland County topped $300,000, a streak that goes back to September 2018. October was also the 17th straight month that the median price for a home sold topped $300,000. Other median prices for a home sold around the region included $260,000 in Randall County, $254,162 in Ector County, $249,900 in Tom Green and Taylor, and $249,000 in Lubbock County. Local realtors have previously told the Reporter-Telegram that climbing interest rates would impact sales. The Associated Press reported this week that mortgage rates are more than double what they were a year ago. This week, the average rate for a 30-year mortgage fell to 6.58%, according to mortgage buyer Freddie Mac. A year ago, it was 3.1%. The AP also reported that adjustable rate mortgages, or ARMs, are at their highest usage in over a decade. A recent snapshot by the Mortgage Bankers Association showed that ARMs accounted for 12.8% of all home loan applications in the week ended October 14th, the AP reported. The last time these loans made up a bigger share of all mortgage applications was in the first week of March 2008. At the start of the year, ARMs represented only 3.1% of all mortgage applications. The average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was then a 3.22%, while last month that rate topped 7%, the highest since 2002. Midland County in October 2022. Homes sold, 165. Dollar value, $55.279 million. Average price for a home sold, $335,024. Median price for a home sold, $317,655. Homes available at the end of the month, 674. Months of inventory, 2.7. Midland County in October 2021. Homes sold, 224. Dollar volume, $77.228 million. Average price for a home sold, $344,769. Median price for a home sold, $310,000. Homes available at end of month, 717. Months of inventory, 3. DPS reports woman dies in crash in Greenwood. A 43-year-old Midland woman died after a Thursday evening accident in Midland County, according to Department of Public Safety officials. Sylvia Polito Clavel was driving a Nissan Sentra East on Farm to Market Road 307 when a Ford F 150 at a stop sign facing north on County Road failed to yield the right-of-way at the stop sign, causing Clavel to strike the pickup, according to DPS. Clavel was pronounced deceased at the scene by Midland Fire Department EMS, according to DPS. DPS reported that Clavel was not wearing a seatbelt. The accident took place around 8:34 p.m. Railroad Commission states Midland County tops 17 million barrels in a month, by Stuart Doreen. Midland was back to producing more than 17 million barrels of oil during the month of August, according to the latest statistics from the Railroad Commission of Texas. The RRC, in its preliminary production report, showed Midland County was again the leader across the state, with 17.336 million barrels production. That total was 15.59% of the 111.17 million barrels produced across the state. The total is also the second most produced in a month this calendar year inside Midland County, according to the RRC. Only the 17.6 million barrels in the preliminary production report for March was greater. It was another banner month for Midland and other counties in close proximity. The RRC showed that Midland and Martin counties accounted for 30.055 million barrels in August, or 27.03% of the state's total. Howard was third in the state's list with 8.53 million barrels. Add that to the total from Midland and Martin counties, and the three I-20 counties accounted for 34.69%, or more than one-third of the state's total. Upton County, which is immediately south of Midland County, was fifth. Glasscock and Andrews counties ranked eighth and ninth, respectively. The Permian Basin accounted for nine of the top 10 counties on the RRC's oil production list in August. The RRC showed Loving was sixth, Reeves was seventh, and Reagan 10th. Those nine Permian Basin counties accounted for 60.83% of the state's total in August, according to the RRC. The Permian's dominance wasn't as great when it came to gas-producing counties. Reeves was by far the number one producer, with 82.547 billion cubic feet produced in August. Midland, third; Loving, fifth; Culberson, sixth; Martin, seventh; and Upton, eighth, finished among the top 10 across the state. The RRC showed 856.297 billion cubic feet produced in August across the state. In August 2021, the preliminary production of crude oil was 111.62 million barrels. The updated total was 127.698 million. During the same month, the preliminary production of gas was 822.692 billion cubic feet. The updated total was 639.41 billion cubic feet. RRC reports Midland District dominates October permits and completions, by Stuart Doreen. No Railroad Commission of Texas District had more permits issued or reported more oil and gas completions than the Midland District during the month of October. The Midland District again dominated the rest of the state when it came to oil completions. The RRC showed 517 completions, or nearly two-thirds of the 778 completions across the state, inside the Midland District. The closest district was the San Antonio area with 76. The Midland District also led when it came to permits issued by the RRC. The 313 in October was 190 more than the San Antonio area, and 42.5% of the 735 permits issued across the state. Lastly, the Midland District was home to 42.3% of new gas completions for October. The 64 inside the Midland District was better than second place Refugio. There were 151 across the state. Statewide, the breakdown of well types for original drilling permits in October 2022 is 191 oil, 122 gas, 501 oil or gas, 25 injection, and 12 other permits, according to the RRC. In October 2022, Commission staff processed 977 oil, 181 gas, and 317 injection completions for new wells, re-entries, and recompletions, compared to 597 oil, 95 gas, and 341 injection completions in August 2021, the RRC reported. Total well completions processed for 2022 year-to-date for new drills, re-entries, and recompletions are 11,442 compared to 7,980 recorded during the same period in 2021, according to the RRC. The Midland District again dominated the rest of the state when it came to oil completions. Travelers return to Midland International by Stuart Doreen. The second most people boarded an airline during the month of October at Midland International Airport compared to any October going back to at least 2009. The city of Midland reported 57,811 people boarded either Southwest Airlines, American Eagle, or United during the month. That was a 15.1% increase over October 2021, and tailing only October 2019, when 58,884 boarded an airline. Reporter Telegram records show that the number of passengers boarding an airline at Midland International increased 36.8% in October compared to October 2012, 42,244. Southwest Airlines again dominated the passenger count with 48.9% of the total paid passenger count. United was second with 30.1%. Both Southwest and United showed increases compared to October 2021, 30.4% for Southwest and 24% for United. It was the first month of the fiscal year, but the metrics were all up, including fuel sales, 14.5%, and parking revenues, 27.6%. Midland Reporter Telegram obituaries published Saturday, November 26th. Betty Johnston. Betty Johnston, 72, died peacefully in her home, surrounded by family, Monday, 11/21/2022. She was born in Rayville, Louisiana, and spent most of her childhood in Westbrook, Texas. She is survived by son, Jeff Johnson, and his wife, LaDonna, daughter, Amy Biedrowski, and her husband, Mike. Brother Jerry Wayne Tate and his wife Loretta. Sister-in-law Charlene Tate. Granddaughter Candace Johnston and her husband Justin. Granddaughter Brittany Johnston. Granddaughter Megan Biedrowski. Granddaughter Hylia Johnston. Grandson Spencer Johnston and granddaughter Danielle Johnston. She is also survived by four great-grandchildren and numerous nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her father, David Vernon Tate, mother, Eleanor Ozella Tate, sister, Dorothy Warren, sister, Geneva Shropshire, sister, Jackie Kreider, brother, Henry David Sonny Boy Dyson, and brother, William Vernon Tate. Viewing will take place on Friday, 11/25/2022, from 5 to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia and Pipkin Funeral Home. The family will receive visitors from 5 to 7. The funeral will take place on Saturday, 11/26/2022 at 10 a.m., also at Llewellyn Garcia and Pipkin Funeral Home. Family will attend a private interment following the service. The family would like to thank Hospice of Midland for their care during her time with their services. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Hospice of Midland. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit their website at www.llewellyngarciapipkin.com. FH.com. Elizabeth Creech Shoemaker. Elizabeth Creech Shoemaker, born on August 24, 1931, to Robert Bryan and Alice Creech. She married L.R. Shoemaker on December 13, 1949, in Stanton, Texas. Survivors include one daughter, Trina Shoemaker, and her husband, Doug. Son-in-law, Steve Cook. Her grandson, Nathan Cook, and his wife, DeLee, and their two sons, Carter and Callan. Her grandson, Brady Cook, and his wife, Joanna, and their three sons, Caleb, Colby, and Colton. Beth is preceded in death by her husband, L.R. Shoemaker, an infant son at birth. Lindsay Shoemaker. Her son, Kevin Shoemaker. Her daughter, Trisha Cook. Her parents, Robert Bryan and Alice Creech. Brothers, Howard Creech, Bob Creech, Earl Creech, and Theryl Creech. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to the Martin County Convent Foundation. Graveside service will be held Monday, November 28, 2022 at 10 a.m. at the Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton with the Reverend Bobby Wilson, pastor of the First United Methodist Church in Stanton, officiating. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. John Yates Sr. John A. Yates Sr. was born August 10th, 1929 in Artesia and passed away on November 21st, 2022 at his home in Artesia at the age of 93. Visitation at Turpining and Sun Mortuary on Monday, November 28th, 2022 from 1 to 6 p.m. Funeral services will take place Tuesday, November 29th, 10 a.m. at First Baptist Church in Artesia. Burial to follow services at Woodbine Cemetery. Reception in John A. Yates' honor at Artesia Country Club at 12:30 p.m. Survivors include his wife, Charlotte G. Yates, daughter, Cynthia Price, and husband, Lester, son, John A. Yates, Jr., and wife, Nancy. Stepson, Scott Bannister, and wife, Terry. Grandchildren, Nicole Wesselman and husband, Lane. Ryan Price and wife, Safi. Sean Price and wife, Lacey. Jeff Price and wife, Allie. John A. Yates III and wife, Lexi. Jeff Bannister and wife, Tammy. Jonathan Bannister and wife, Lennon. Brian Bannister and wife, Elva. Wesley Bannister, Shelby Bannister, Garcia, and husband Esteban, and Wilson Bannister, plus great-grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to one of John's favorite listed charities, St. Jude's Hospital for Children, Children's Hospital of Colorado Foundation, 13123 East 16th, Avenue, Box 045 in Aurora, Colorado, 80045. Your own favorite charity in John A. Yates Sr.'s name. Peggy J. Hodge, 1221-1934 to 1115-2022. Peggy J. Peg Hodge, 87, of Midland, passed away on November 15, 2022, just one day shy of her 70th wedding anniversary. Peg was born on December 21, 1934, to William and Marie Graves in Lampasas, Texas. Peg is preceded in death by her parents, William and Marie Graves. Peg is survived by her beloved husband, Gene. She's also survived by her son, Bob Hodge, his wife, Chris, of Midland, and her daughter, Cynthia Daniel, of Houston. Together, Peg and Jean have 6 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Hospice of Midland or the First Presbyterian Church. The family will hold private services. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices from Saturday, November 26th. David Myers. David Eugene Myers, age 73, of Georgetown, Texas, passed away Sunday, 23rd of October, 2022. A celebration of life for David will be planned for early January 2023. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Golfers Against Cancer. Credit card donations, www.golfersagainstcancer.org. Choose to chip in. Cash check donations, mail to Golfers Against Cancer, Northgate Country Club, 17110 Northgate Forest Drive, Houston, Texas, 77068. Or St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Credit card donations, www.st.jude.org. Cash check donations mail to 501 St. Jude Place, Memphis, Tennessee, 38105. Forrest Riggs. A visitation for Forrest will be held Friday, December 2nd, 2022, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. A celebration of life will occur Saturday, December 3rd, 2022, from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com for the Riggs family. Joe Don Lilly. Joe Don Lilly, 58, of Knott, passed away November 24th, 2022. The family will receive guests from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday, November 27th, 2022, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, November 28th, 2022, at Kelview Heights Baptist Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Peggy Ellis Lee. Peggy Ellis Lee, 62, of Midland, passed away November 25th, 2022. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, December 1st, 2022, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Willie Mae McMurray. Willie Mae McMurray, 86, of Midland, passed away November 21st, 2022. Graveside service will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, December 3rd, 2022, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, November 26th. Jail workers stay on their toes. Earlier this month, the Ector County Sheriff's Office arrested a man on an arson charge. They didn't have to take him to jail, though. He was already there. He was just mad, so he set stuff on fire. It was a good fire, too. It was like a campfire. said Ector County Jail Administrator James McKinney. According to jail records, Fernando de la Fuente created a torch using toilet paper and an electrical outlet and set mattress stuffing, books, and trash ablaze. He told detention officers he was irritated with his diet tray. Luckily, neither De La Fuente nor anyone else was injured, but he is hardly alone in creating headaches for understaffed jail personnel, McKinney said. Boredom causes jail inmates to find many creative ways to entertain themselves, but jail officials said technology is helping jailers get the upper hand. McKinney, who was promoted to jail administrator in August, has worked in the jail for more than two decades. He's the man responsible for keeping his detention staff and the jail's 700 to 800 inmates safe. I'm going on 26 years doing this, and I'm still amazed at some of the stuff they do, McKinney said. The number of inmates being disciplined varies from week to week, he said. You may have three or four in a week, and you may not have any that week. At the jail, inmates are divided up based on gender and the severity and type of crime they're accused of committing. Co-defendants are also separated from each other. Detention staff also take into consideration past behaviors and mental illnesses when they are determining where inmates are placed. Typically, women and people accused of lesser severe crimes cause fewer problems than those facing lengthy prison sentences and/or those who have been incarcerated before, McKinney said. Shirley Hardy, a sheriff's office spokeswoman who spent 5 years working in the jail, said repeat offenders often pass down what they've learned to newer inmates. They are constantly coming up with creative ideas to entertain themselves, including using orange peels, apples, and other food to make hooch, she said. If they had that much energy toward a job out in the real world, it would be amazing, Hardy said. There are 24-person tanks and 8-person tanks, and each tank has a day room where inmates can mingle, watch TV, and use a kiosk to send emails to loved ones. One of the inmates' favorite pastimes is using a tank's one electrical outlet to start fires to smoke things. You can tell when football season starts because the fire setting stops. Once they've destroyed the TV or flipped the breaker, we won't turn it on for a while, McKinney said. They'll get requests from inmates asking for another inmate to be removed because he tripped the breaker and they want the TV back on, McKinney said. The inmates also run the risk of blowing the breaker to the tank next door and angering all of those inmates, too. Last month, prosecutors seeking a life sentence for armed robber Isaac Jackson put multiple jailers on the witness stand to talk about Jackson starting a fire in his tank to smoke illicit substances. I said, that's great. I told my wife that's good. That way the inmates read it in the newspaper and they'll know, hey, if I do something, they're going to use it at my trial, McKinney said. A lot of them think they're not going to get into trouble for it. The truth is, an inmate's disciplinary record follows him wherever he goes, Hardy said. If inmates are able to get paper clips, they'll stick them into the socket to heat up plastic cups filled with various concoctions, McKinney said. They'll get together and, like, have a party. They'll get their commissary and put soups and everything else together and just make a hodgepodge, you know, tortillas and Cheetos, and just put it all into, like, a soup. Not too long ago, detention officers were having a lot of problems with inmates smoking mail that had been dipped in illicit substances, but Ector County has found a way to curb that issue. Nearly all mail has been sent to Florida for the last few years and scanned into machines for inmates to read on kiosks or tablets in the jail, McKinney said. As of last year, family members and friends hoping to slip drug-laden documents can't disguise them as legal documents anymore. Legal mail is open in front of the inmates, scanned into a machine to be read on kiosks or tablets, and then shredded. Books and magazines are no longer accepted unless they come directly from Amazon or warehouses for Barnes & Noble. When we first started, we didn't have cameras. We didn't have any of this technology, McKinney said. It's amazing. You can see what they're doing. It's just amazing technology compared to when we started, Hardy agreed. Not only are the kiosks used when it comes to mail and email, they're also used for inmate grievances, McKinney said. If an inmate was wanting to complain about his food, he used to do a paper grievance, but now they do their grievances over the tablets or the kiosk, and we can pull it up, McKinney said. Everybody can see it, and we can answer it. And it's time-stamped when you answer. It keeps track for you. Having only one TV per tank doesn't actually cause as many problems as one would think, McKinney said. Every once a while, somebody will get mad because, hey, we've been listening to Spanish music all day, or we've been watching this all day, because you do get guys who don't speak English, and you've got guys who want to watch TV too. Usually, however, the different groups will come to an arrangement, McKinney said. McKinney said each tank follows its own rules, and most people follow them because they don't want to upset the other 7 or 23 inmates sharing the tank. They're pretty respectful, and for the most part, because they're going to have to live with those people, Hardy said, noting they are particularly conscientious when it comes to sharing the bathroom. McKinney and Hardy said it's a shame the county has a problem finding people to work within the jail, because most inmates are not problem inmates, and even when inmates do get upset, most just want to be heard. It's a people job. If you enjoy people, those inmates are people all day long. If you treat them fairly and with respect, you get respected, Hardy said. I call them ma'am and sir, even if they're inmate, McKinney said. They'll tell you, you respect me, I'm going to respect you. Hardy joined the Ector County Sheriff's Office in 1993 and has never regretted it. It's a wonderful, wonderful career if you're a people person. You have respect for people and they have respect for you, Hardy said. You're going to get in fights, but there's people that you cannot be nice to. There's people that you can't get past, but that's in the world as well. This is Jane, reading for the OA for Saturday, November 26th. Midland woman dies in crash. A Midland woman was killed Thursday in a two-vehicle crash in Midland. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, a 61-year-old Midland man was driving a Ford F-150 when he failed to yield the right-of-way at a stop sign at FM 307 and County Road 1110 around 8:30 p.m., and was struck by a Nissan Sentra being driven by Sylvia Paludo Clavel, 43, of Midland. Clavel, who wasn't wearing a seatbelt, was pronounced dead at the scene. Her passenger, an 83-year-old Midland woman who was wearing a seatbelt, escaped injury, according to the DPS. The driver of the Ford, who was also wearing a seatbelt, also escaped injury. This is Jane, reading for the OA for Saturday, November 26th, from the Death Notice and Obituary section. In Odessa, Adam Sanchez Garcia, 73, died on Saturday, November 19th, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 11 a.m. on Tuesday, November 29th, at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. In Odessa, Sherry Carlene Hooper, 60, died on Thursday, November 17th, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. In Odessa, Judy Adine Joyner, 77, died on Friday, November 18th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. November 29th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor James McCrary is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. In Odessa, Marlon Dwayne McNeil, 86, died on Saturday, November 19th, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. on Tuesday, November 29th, at Cooper Cemetery in Jal, New Mexico. Pastor Andy Hill is officiating. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. In Odessa, Terry Ann Talamantes, 54, died on Sunday, November 13th. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Monday, November 28, at Acres West Funeral Chapel at 8115 West University Boulevard in Odessa. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery at 4100 North FM 1788 in Midland. Dr. Donnie Raleigh is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. In Odessa, Manuel Fuentes Tarango, 71, died on Tuesday, November 22nd. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. on Wednesday, November 30th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. The family will receive friends for visitation on Tuesday, November 29th from 5 to 9 p.m. at the funeral home. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. In Odessa, Mona Faye McHugh Greason, 86, passed away from this life Friday, November 18th. Mona was born May 29th, 1936, in Clyde, Texas. She was preceded in death by her parents, Wilford Gordon McHugh and Mattie Lee Blankenship, her husband Gene A. Greason, her son Gary Greason, sister Judy Autry, and granddaughter Rochelle Brake. No services will be held at this time. In lieu of flowers, donate in her memory to Worldwide Work of Jehovah's Witness at jw.org. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Good morning, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, November 27th. STEM World Travelers Club Brings Culture to Kids by Ruth Campbell. UTPB STEMS Academy students in kindergarten through second grade learn the contents and culture of the world through the World Travelers Club. The 30 club members didn't take literal trips, but they learned some basics about geography, cities, and states. School counselor Jamie Enriquez said she had a daughter who goes to Hayes STEM Academy, and they had a similar club learning about capitals and related items in the first year for the World Travelers Club. I really wanted a club that was similar, where we learned about geographical things, how to read maps, and how to understand the difference between cities and states. But I wanted to really focus more on the cultural piece and how cultures are different. It was just to promote diversity and to be excited to learn about peoples different than ourselves. They focused first on learning their addresses, their cities, and their state. I had them create their own map and learned how geographical features like mountains and water. They created their own school maps in their dream playground. We learned about the 50 states, Enrica says. We learned about a country in each of the seven continents, she added. For some children, it was the first time they had seen a globe. Enriquez borrowed one from a social studies teacher, showed them where the different places were on it, and asked them what they noticed. With Japan, students noticed it was surrounded by water. They were landlocked country, and the South America is below us. After learning about geography, they packed an imaginary bag with what they would take if they were going to the country. The student learned about culture through the hands-on art project, for example, learning about origami when to discuss Japan. Teaching 5 and 7-year-olds origami was fun. We made castles for England. They got to cut out shapes, and they made more castles. It was so cute. For Brazil, we made masks for carnivals, and they learned why they celebrate carnivals, which is a kickoff for Lent. At the end of that, they got to present their own cultural. Each their own culture, and the culture they found interesting. They could do it with language, dance, food, or art, Enrica said. Most of the club members liked what they learned about Brazil. Caleb Parentes, a 7-year-old second grader, said he liked learning about the world. He added that Brazil had martial arts and World Cup, which he also enjoyed. Liam Halford, an 8-year-old second grader, said he thought the club was super cool because he got to learn about new countries. Gavin Gonzalez, a 7-year-old second grader, said he enjoyed show and tell, where he brought homemade tamales. Gonzalez enjoys his treat with mustard. First grader Kylie Criswell, 6, and Kira Torres, 7, both thought the club was really fun. I was really excited to join the World Travelers because you got to explore the world and all that stuff, Criswell said. She also enjoyed the masks that were worn for Carnival in Brazil and the World Cup. For show and tell, Criswell bought a pillow that her grandmother made before she died, so it's very special to her. In addition to being the counselor in charge of the World Travelers Club, which she plans to have again next year, she oversees the eSports Club and Student Council and plans to have a Maze Runner Club in the spring. Noting that the students love Legos and building things, Enrico said she wanted to provide real-world problems for them to tackle with the Maze Runner Club. She added she has until spring to think about what challenges will look like. Woman accused of endangerment. The Odessa woman was arrested Tuesday night after surveillance video showed she left three children alone in a Chevy Tahoe at Lowe's, and they caused the Tahoe to crash into another vehicle. According to the Odessa Police Department report, an Odessa police officer was investigating a crime of mischief case at Lowe's on 42nd Street around 7:30 p.m. when he learned about the crash and reported it to another officer. Chelsea Renee Roy, 30, admitted she left her children ages 5, 6, and 8 alone in the vehicle so she could run inside and grab a couple items she needed for moving, the report stated. Roy also told the officers one of her sons said the other vehicle crashed into them, but the surveillance video showed that 5 minutes after Roy left the vehicle, there was movement inside the Chevy near the driver's side and the Chevy rolled into the other vehicle, the report stated. Roy was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of 3 counts of abandonment, endangerment of a child, and state jail felony punishable for 6 months to 2 years in jail. She was released Wednesday after posting surety bond holding $9,000.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.